Norman rolled slowly back down the amusement park midway and toward the picnic area. The women were still eating, but not for much longer. He could see the first dessert trays being passed. He'd have to move fast if he wanted to act while most of them were still in one place. He wasn't worried, though. The worry had passed. He knew just where to go in order to find one woman alone, one woman he could talk to up close. "Women can't stay away from bathrooms, Normie," his father had once told him. "They're like dogs that can't pass a single damn lilac bush without stopping to squat and piddle." Norman wheeled his chair briskly past the sign reading, "To Comfort Stations." "Just one," he thought. "Just one, walking by herself. One who can tell me where Rose is gone if she's not here. If it's San Francisco, I'll follow her there. If it's Tokyo, I'll follow her there. And if it's hell, I'll follow her there. Why not? That's where we're going to end up anyway, and probably keeping house together." He passed through a little grove of ornamental firs and went freewheeling down a mild slope toward a windowless brick building with a door at either end. Men on the right, women on the left. Norman rolled his chair past the door marked Women and parked on the far side of the building. This was a very satisfactory location in Norman's view. A narrow strip of bare earth, a line of plastic garbage cans, and a high-stake privacy fence. He got out of the wheelchair and peered around the corner of the building, sliding his head out farther and farther until he could see the path. He felt all right again, calm and settled. His head still ached, but the pain had receded to a dull throb. A pair of women came out of the toy grove, no good. That was the worst thing about his current stakeout position, of course, the way women so often went to the John in pairs. What did they do in there, for Christ's sake? Finger each other? These two went in. Norman could hear them through the nearest vent, laughing and talking about someone named Fred. Fred did this, Fred did that, Fred did the other thing. Apparently Fred was quite the boy. Every time the one doing most of the talking paused for breath, the other one would giggle. A sound so jagged it made Norman feel as if someone were rolling his brain in broken glass the way a baker would roll a donut in sugar. He stood where he was, though, so he could watch the path, and he stood perfectly still, except for his hands, which opened and closed, opened and closed. At last they came out, still talking about Fred and still giggling, walking so close together that their hips brushed and their shoulders touched, and Norman found himself hard put to keep from rushing after them and seizing their slut-whore heads, one head for the palm of each hand, so he could bring them together and shatter them like a couple of pumpkins stuffed full of high explosive. "Don't," he whispered to himself. Sweat ran down his face in large, clear droplets and stood out all over his freshly shaven skull. "Oh, don't. Not now. For Christ's sake, don't lose it now." He was shivering, and his headache had come back full force, pounding like a fist. The bright zigzags boogied and hustled around the edges of his vision, and his nose had begun to leak from the right nostril. The next woman who came into view was alone, and Norman recognized her, white hair on top, ugly varicose veins on the bottom, the woman who'd given him the yogurt pop. "I got a pop for you," he thought, tensing as she started down the concrete path. "I got a pop for you, and if you don't give me the answers I'm looking for, and right away you're apt to find yourself eating every goddamn inch of it." Then someone else came out of the little grove of trees. Norman had seen her, too, the fat, nosy bitch in the red jumper, the one who had looked him over when the guy in the booth called him back. Once again, he felt that maddening sense of recognition, like a name that dances impudently on your tongue, darting back every time you try to catch it. Did he know her? If only his head wasn't aching. She still had her oversized purse, the one which looked more like a briefcase, and she was pawing around in it. "What are you looking for, fat girl?" Norman thought. "Couple of Twinkies? A few mallow creams? Maybe a..." And suddenly, just like that, he had it. He'd read about her in the library, in a newspaper article about daughters and sisters. There had been a picture of her crouched down in some asshole karate posture, looking more like a double-wide trailer than Bruce Lee. She was the bitch who had told the reporter men weren't their enemies, but if they hit, we hit back. Gert. He didn't remember the last one, but her first name had been Gert. "Get out of here, Gert," Norman thought at the big black woman in the red jumper. His hands were tightly clenched, the nails digging into his palms. But she didn't. "Lana," she called instead. "Hey, Lana!" The white-haired woman turned, then walked back to Fat Girl, who looked like the fridge in a dress. He watched the white-haired woman named Lana lead old Dirty Gertie back into the trees. Gertie was holding something out to her as they went. It looked like a piece of paper. Norman armed sweat out of his eyes and waited for Lana to finish her confab with Gert and come down to the toilet. On the other side of the grove, in the picnic area, desserts were now being finished up, and when they were gone, the trickle of women coming down here to use the bathroom would become a flood. If his luck didn't change, and change soon, this could turn into a real mess. "Come on, come on," Norman muttered under his breath, and, as if in answer, someone came out of the trees and started down the path. It was neither Gert nor Lana the yogurt pop lady, but it was someone else Norman recognized just the same. One of the whores he'd seen in the garden on the day he'd reconned Daughters and Sisters. It was the one with the two-tone rock star hair. The bold bitch had even waved at him. "Scared the hell out of me, too," he thought. "But turnabout's fair play, isn't it? Come on now. Just come on down here to Papa." Norman felt himself getting hard, and his headache was entirely gone. He stood as still as a statue, with one eye peeking around the corner of the building, praying that Gert would not pick this particular moment to come back, praying that the girl with the half-green, half-orange hair wouldn't change her mind. No one came out of the trees, and the girl with the fucked-up hair kept approaching. "Ms. Punky Grungy Scumbucket of 1994, come into my parlor," said the spider to the fly. Closer and closer, and now she was reaching out for the door handle, but the door never opened because Norman's hand closed on Cynthia's thin wrist before she could touch the handle. She looked at him, startled, her eyes opening wide. "Come around here," he said, dragging her after him. "Come on around here so I can talk to you. So I can talk to you up close."
Gert Kinshaw was hurrying for the bathroom, almost running, when, wonder of wonders, she saw the very woman she'd been looking for just ahead. She immediately opened her capacious purse and began hunting for the photograph. "Lana!" she called. "Hey, Lana!" Lana came back up the path. "I'm looking for Kathy Sparks," she said. "Have you seen her?" "Sure, she's throwing horseshoes," Gert said, cocking a thumb back toward the picnic area. "Saw her not 2 minutes ago." "Great!" Lana started in that direction at once. Gert cast one yearning glance at the comfort station, then fell in beside her. She guessed her bladder would hold a little longer. "I thought maybe she'd had one of her panic attacks and just fired on out of here," Lana was saying. "You know how she gets." "Uh-huh." Gert handed Lana the fax photo just before they re-entered the trees. Lana studied it curiously. It was her first look at Norman because she wasn't a DNS resident. She was a psychiatric social worker who lived in Crescent Heights with her pleasant, non-abusive husband and her three pleasant, non-dysfunctional kids. "Who's this?" Lana asked. Before Gert could answer, Cynthia Smith walked by. As always, even under these circumstances, her weird hair made Gert grin. "Hi, Gert. Love your shirt," Cynthia said smartly. This was not a compliment, but just something the girl said, a little Cynthia-ism. "Thanks, I like your shorts. But I bet if you really tried, you could find a pair that let even more of your cheeks hang out." "Hey, tell me about it," Cynthia said, and went on her way with her small but undeniably cute fanny ticking back and forth like the pendulum of a clock. Lana looked at her with amusement, then turned her attention back to the photo. As she studied it, she absently stroked her long white hair, which she had tied into a ponytail. "Do you know him?" Gert asked. Lana shook her head, but Gert thought she was expressing doubt rather than saying no. "Imagine him without the hair." Lana did better than that. She covered the photo from the hairline up. Then she studied it more closely than ever, her lips moving as if she were reading it rather than looking at it. When she looked up at Gert again, her face was both puzzled and concerned. "I gave a yogurt pop to a guy this morning," she began hesitantly. "He was wearing sunglasses, but..." "He was in a wheelchair," Gert said, and although she knew this was where the work really began, she felt a great weight slip off her shoulders just the same. It was better to know than not to know. Better to be sure. "Yes. Is he dangerous?" "He is, isn't he? I'm here with a couple of women who've been through a great deal of trauma in the last few years. They're pretty delicate. Is there going to be trouble, Gert? I'm asking for them, not me. Gert thought it over carefully before saying, I think everything's going to be all right. I think the scary part's almost over.
Norman tore off Cynthia's sleeveless blouse, baring her teacup-sized breasts. He clamped one hand over her mouth, simultaneously pinning her to the wall and muzzling her. He rubbed his crotch against hers. He felt her trying to pull back, but of course there was no way she could do that, and that excited him more, how he had her trapped here. But it was only his body that was excited. His mind was floating about 3 feet over his head, watching serenely as Norman leaned forward and clamped his teeth on Miss Punky Grungy's shoulder. He battened on her like a vampire and began drinking her blood when it burst through the skin. It was hot and salty, and when he ejaculated in his pants, he was hardly aware of it, any more than he was aware of her screaming against his hard palm.
Go on back and hang with your patients until I give you the all clear, Gert told Lana. And do me a favor, don't mention this to anyone, not yet. Your friends aren't the only women here today who are psychologically delicate. I know, Gert squeezed her arm. It'll be fine, I promise. Okay, you know best. Yeah, right, dream on. But I do know he shouldn't be hard to find if he's still cruising around in that wheelchair. If you see him, keep away from him, do you understand? Keep away from him. Lana looked at her with deep dismay. What are you going to do? Take a leak before I die of uremic poisoning, then go to the security office and tell them that a man in a wheelchair tried to snatch my purse. We'll go from there. But step one is getting him the hell away from our picnic. Rosie wasn't here. She might have a date or some other appointment, and Gert had never been so grateful for anything in her life. She was his trigger. With Rosie not around, they had a chance of neutralizing him before he did any damage. Do you want me to wait for you while you go to the toilet? Lana asked nervously. I'll be fine. Lana frowned at the path leading back through the grove. Maybe I'll wait anyway, she said. Gert smiled. Okay, this won't take long, believe me. She had almost reached the comfort station when a sound impinged on her thoughts. Someone panting and hard. No, two someones. A smile curved the corners of Gert's large mouth. Someone was enjoying a little afternoon delight behind the toilets from the sound, just having a nice little, talk to me, you bitch. The voice so low it sounded almost like the growl of a dog froze the smile on Gert's lips. Tell me where she is and do it right now. Gert ran around the side of the squat brick building so fast she barely avoided hitting the abandoned wheelchair and going ass over tea kettle. The bald man in the motorcycle jacket, Norman Daniels, was standing with his back to her, holding Cynthia so tightly by her thin upper arms that his thumbs had nearly disappeared into her scant flesh. His face was jammed down against hers, but Gert could see the peculiar cant to Cynthia's nose. She'd seen that before, once in her own mirror. The girl's nose had been broken. Tell me where she is, or you'll never have to bother with lipstick again, because I'll bite your fucking kisser right off your face. Gert stopped thinking then, stopped hearing. She went on autopilot. Two steps took her to where Daniels was. As she took them, she laced the fingers of both hands together to make a cudgel. She raised this over her right shoulder, getting as much height as she could. She wanted all the velocity she could muster. Just before she brought her hands down, Cynthia's terrified eyes shifted to her, and Rosie's husband saw it happen. He was quick, Gert had to give him that. He was terribly quick. Her locked hands caught him, and caught him hard, but not on the nape of the neck where she wanted to hit him. He had already started to wheel around, and her hands caught him on the side of his face and the angle of his jaw instead. Her chance for a quick no-fuss, no-muss knockout had passed. As he turned to face her, Gert's first thought was that he had been eating strawberries. He grinned at her with teeth that were still dripping blood. The grin horrified Gert and filled her with the certainty that she had only managed to make sure two women were going to die back here instead of one. This wasn't a man at all. This was Grendel in a motorcycle jacket. Why, it's Dirty Gertie, Norman exclaimed. You want to wrestle, Gertie? Is that what you want? To wrestle? Gonna whip me into submission with those 52 D's of yours. Is that what you're gonna do? He laughed, patting the flat of one hand against his chest to communicate how tickled he was by the idea. The zippers on his jacket jingled. Gert snatched a glance at Cynthia, who was looking down at herself as if wondering where her shirt had gone. "Cynthia, run!" Cynthia gave her a dazed look, took two hesitant steps backward, then simply leaned against the comfort station, as if just the thought of escape had tired her out. Gert could already see bruises rising on her cheeks and forehead like fresh dough. "Gert, Gert, Bobert," Norman crooned, starting toward her. "Banana, fana, fopert, fee, fi, momert, Gert!" He laughed like a child at this, then armed some of Cynthia's blood off his mouth. Gert could see beads of sweat clinging to his naked skull. They looked like sequins. "Oh, Gertie," Norman crooned, and now his upper body began to sway from side to side, like the body of a cobra emerging from a snake charmer's basket. "Oh, Gertie, I'm gonna roll you like a donut. I'm gonna turn you inside out like a pair of gloves. And why don't you come on and do it?" she barked at him. "This ain't the high school prom, you chicken-shit asshole. If you want me, come and get me." Daniel stopped weaving and gaped at her, seemingly unable to believe that this tub of guts had shouted at him, had taunted him. Behind him, Cynthia retreated another two or three tired stumble steps, the seat of her shorts whispering against the brick of the comfort station, then leaned against the wall again. Gert cocked her arms and held them out in front of her. The palms of her hands faced each other, about 20 inches apart. Her fingers were splayed. She dropped her head between her shoulders, hulking like a mother bear. Norman observed this defensive posture, and his expression of surprise dissolved into amusement. "What you gonna do, Gert?" he asked her. "You think you're gonna run some Bruce Lee moves on me? Hey, I got news for you. He's dead, Gertie. Just like you're gonna be in about 15 seconds, just a fat old nigger bitch lying dead on the ground." He laughed. Gert suddenly thought of Lana Klein, glancing nervously around and saying that maybe she would wait for Gert to use the bathroom. "Lana!" she screamed at the top of her voice. "He's here! If you're still there, run and get help!" Rosie's husband looked startled again for a moment, then relaxed. His smile resurfaced. He snatched a quick glance over his shoulder to make sure Cynthia was still there, then looked back at Gert. His upper body resumed its back and forth swaying. "Where's my wife?" he asked. "Tell me that, and maybe I'll only break one of your arms. Hell, I might even let you go. She stole my bank card. I want it back, that's all." Can't rush him, Gert thought. He has to come to me. There's no other way I have even a chance of handling him. But just how am I supposed to make him do that? Her thoughts turned to Peter Slowick, the parts that had been missing and the places where the concentration of bite marks had been the heaviest, and thought she might know. "You give the term, eat me, a whole new meaning, don't you, fag boy? Just sucking his cock wasn't enough for you, was it? So what do you say? Are you coming for me, or do women scare you too much?" The smile did not just slip from his face this time. When she called him a fag boy, it fell off so suddenly that Gert almost heard it shatter like an icicle on the steel toes of his boots. The weaving stopped. "I'll kill you, you bitch!" Norman screamed and charged. Gert turned sideways, just as she had when Cynthia charged her on the day Rosie had brought her new picture down to the basement rec room at DNS. She kept her hands lowered longer than she did when she was teaching throw holes to the girls, knowing that not even his blind rage was enough to guarantee her success. This was a powerful man, and if she didn't suck him all the way in, she'd be chewed up like a rat in a threshing machine. Norman reached for her, his lips already peeling back from his teeth, getting ready to bite. Gert tucked even further, her fanny slapping against the brick wall, and thought, "Help me, God." Then she seized both of Norman's thick, hairy wrists. "Don't spoil it by thinking about it," she told herself, and turned back toward him, socking one big hip into his side and then snap pivoting to her left. Her legs spread, then bunched, and her corduroy jumper never had a chance. It split up the back almost all the way to her waist with a sound like a pine knot exploding in a fireplace. The move worked like a charm. Her hip had become a ball bearing, and Norman went flying helplessly across it, his expression of rage turning to a face full of shock. He crashed head first into the wheelchair. It overturned and landed on top of him. "Whee!" Cynthia said in a husky little croak from where she was leaning against the wall. Lana Klein's brown eyes peered cautiously around the side of the building. "What is it? What are you shouting about?" She saw the bleeding man trying to crawl out from beneath the overturned wheelchair, saw the bright malevolence in his eyes, and stopped talking. "Run and get help," Gert snapped at her. "Security, right now, scream your head off." Norman shoved the wheelchair away. His forehead was only dripping blood, but his nose was gushing like a fountain. "I'm gonna kill you for that," he whispered. Gert had no intention of giving him a chance to try. As Lana turned and fled, howling at the top of her lungs, Gert landed on Norman Daniels in a flying drop that Hulk Hogan would have envied. There was a lot of her to drop, 280 pounds at last count, and Norman's efforts to get to his feet ceased at once. His arms collapsed like the legs of a card table that has been asked to hold a truck engine. His already wounded nose slammed into the hard-packed dirt between the brick wall and the fence, and his balls were driven into one of the wheelchair footrests with paralyzing force. He tried to scream. His face certainly looked like the face of a man who is screaming, and produced only a harsh wheezing sound. Now she was sitting on top of him. The jumper's split skirt hiked almost all the way to her hips, and as she sat there, wondering what to do next, she found herself remembering the first two or three times in therapy circle, when Rosie had finally mustered enough courage to speak. The first thing she told them was that she had terrible backaches, backaches that even lying down in a hot bath could sometimes not ease. And when she had told them why, many of the women had nodded in recognition and understanding. Gert had been one of the nodders. Now she reached down and pulled the split skirt higher, revealing a pair of vast blue cotton underpants. "Rosie says you're a kidney man, Norman. She says that's because you're one of those shy guys who don't like to leave marks. Also, you like the way she looks when you hit her there, don't you? That sick look. All the color goes out of her face, doesn't it? Even her lips. I know, because I had a boyfriend who was that way. When you see that sick look on her face, it fixes something inside you, doesn't it? At least temporarily. Bitch," he whispered. "Yeah, you're a kidney man, sure. I can tell a lot from faces. It's a talent I have." She was using her knees to wriggle her way up his body. She had made it almost to his shoulders. "Some guys are leg men, some guys are ass men, some guys are tit men, and then there are some guys, weirded out assholes like you, Norman, who are kidney men. Well, you probably know the old saying. To each her own," said the old maid as she kissed the cow. "Off me," he whispered. "Rosie's not here, Norm," she said, ignoring him and wriggling a little higher. "But she left you a little message from her kidneys, by way of my kidneys. I hope you're ready, because here it comes." She knee-walked one final step, positioned herself over his upturned face, and let go. Ah, sweet relief. At first, Norman didn't appear to realize what was happening. Then understanding came. He screamed and tried to buck her off. Gert felt herself rising and used her buttocks to thump herself back down on top of him. She was surprised he was able to make as much of an effort as he had after the pounding he had taken. "No, you don't, me fine bucko," she said, and went on voiding her bladder. He was in no danger of drowning, but she had never seen such revulsion and anger on a human face. And over what? A little hot water. And if anyone in the history of the world had ever needed pissing on, it was this sick Norman gave a vast, inarticulate cry, reached up with both hands, grabbed her forearms, and sank his nails into them. Gert screamed, mostly in surprise, although it did hurt like hell, and shifted her weight backward. He timed her move perfectly and flung himself up again as she made it, harder than before this time, and succeeded in tipping her over. She went sprawling against the brick wall to her left. Norman stumble-staggered to his feet, his face and bald head running with moisture, his motorcycle jacket dripping with it, the plain white T-shirt beneath the jacket plastered to his body. "You pissed on me, you cunt!" he wheezed and lunged for her. Cynthia stuck her foot out. Norman tripped over it and went sprawling, face first, into the wheelchair again. He scrambled away from it on his hands and knees, then turned. He tried to get up, almost made it, then fell back, panting, looking at Gert with his bright gray eyes, crazy eyes. Gert started toward him, meaning to put him down and keep him down. She would break his back like a snake if that was what it took, and this was the time to do it, before he found enough strength to get on his feet again. He reached into one of the motorcycle jacket's many pockets, and for one stomach-freezing moment she was sure he had a gun, that he was going to shoot her 2 or 3 times in the gut. "At least I'll die with an empty bladder," she thought, and stopped where she was. It wasn't a gun, but it was bad enough. He had a taser. Gert knew a crazy homeless woman downtown who had one and used it to kill rats with, the ones so big they thought they were cocker spaniels who just didn't happen to have pedigree papers. "You want some of this?" Norman asked, still on his knees. He waved the taser back and forth in front of him. "You want a little, Gertie? You might as well come and get it, because you're gonna get some of it whether you want it or..." He trailed off, looking doubtfully toward the corner of the building. Cries of female excitement and dismay drifted from that direction. They were still distant, but they were getting closer. Gert used his moment of distraction to take a step backward, grab the handles of the fallen wheelchair, and jerk it upright. She stepped behind it, the chair's push handles completely lost in her big brown fists. She darted it at him in quick little pushes. "Yeah, come on," she said. "Come on, kidney man. Come on, chicken shit. Come on, fag boy. You want to zap me? Got your phaser set to stun, do you? Come on, then. I think we got time for one more tango before the men in the white coat show up to take you away to Sunnydale Acres or wherever they store weird fucks like you." He got to his feet, glancing again toward the sound of the approaching voices, and Gert thought, "What the fuck? I only have one life, let me live it as a blonde," and shoved the wheelchair at him as hard as she could. It struck him dead center, and he went over again with a yell. Gert lunged after him, hearing Cynthia's teary, wavering scream just one instant too late. "Look out, Gert, he's still got it!" There was a small but vicious crackling sound, zzz, and a bolt of chrome-plated agony shot up from Gert's ankle where he had applied the taser, all the way to her hip. The fact that her skin was wet with urine probably made Norman's weapon even more effective. All the muscles in her left leg clenched eye-wateringly tight, then let go completely. Gert spilled to the ground. As she went, she grabbed onto the wrist of the hand with the taser in it and twisted it as hard as she could. Norman howled with pain and kicked out both booted feet. One missed completely, but the heel of the other caught her high up in the diaphragm just below her breasts. The pain was so sudden and so strong that Gert forgot all about her leg, at least temporarily. But she held on to the taser, twisting his wrist until his fingers opened and the nasty gadget fell to the ground. He scrambled back from her, blood bubbling from his mouth and snorting out of his nose in fine droplets. His eyes were wide and disbelieving. The idea that a woman had administered this beating hadn't sunk in, perhaps couldn't sink in. He staggered up, glanced in the direction of the approaching voices. They were very close now. And then fled along the board fence back toward the amusement park. Gert didn't think he would get far before attracting the interest of park security. He looked like an extra from a Friday the 13th movie. "Gert!" Cynthia was crying and attempting to crawl to where Gert lay on her side, watching Norman disappear from view. Gert turned her attention to the girl and saw she'd taken a much worse beating than Gert had thought at first. A bruise like a thundercloud was puffing up over her right eye, and her nose would probably never be the same. Gert struggled to her knees and crawled toward Cynthia. They met and held each other that way, arms locked around necks to keep them from tumbling over. Speaking with enormous effort through her puffy lips, Cynthia said, "I would have thrown him myself, like you taught us, only he took me by surprise." "That's all right," Gert said and kissed her gently on the temple. "How bad are you hurt?"
"No, no, not coughing up blood. Step in the right direction."
She was trying to smile. It was clearly painful, but she was trying anyway.
"Pissed on him," Yes, I did. Bitchin' good, Cynthia whispered, and then began to cry again. Gert took her in her arms, and that was how the first group of women, closely followed by a pair of pier security guards, found them. On their knees, between the back of the bathroom and the abandoned, overturned wheelchair, each with her head against the shoulder of the other, clinging together like shipwrecked sailors.